Hey, Chris, are you there now?
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, good to have you back.
Are you on a phone that has reception stuff? Is that what's happening?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Well.
So you had started to talk about striped shirt being on a movie set.
Yeah, I was just saying Maggie Gyllenhaal was a Satanist, and she had Kenneth Anger tattooed on her chest, and I wasn't familiar with Kenneth Anger back then.
She had an image of Kenneth Anger tattooed on her chest?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
She does in real life? And she has that tattoo?
No, just in the movie.
Okay.
She's a Satanist in the movie.
I was like, is she covering up a Kenneth Anger tattoo?
Yeah, Kenneth Anger has Lucifer on his chest.
Yeah.
And Kenneth Anger is the one who I learned that Lucifer means I bring the light. So now I have that tattooed on me.
Uh-huh.
But you were I don't know, you got cut off on our end earlier than that. You were saying these girls told me like MK Ultra striped shirt, and you're saying that's not how it works, having been on a movie.
Yeah.
No, of course. That's what I'm saying
with the Maggie Gyllenhaal thing. You know what I mean? It's just John Waters is friends with Kenneth Anger, and he admires him. So he makes her a Satanist. But I don't think it's like some Hollywood thing where like somebody was like, John Waters, you got to put Kenneth Anger on here because he's a Satanist. You know what I mean? I think sometimes things just are like the occult is embedded in things. Another thing that's weird, it's really weird because I explained this before, but it's like I'm on a rooftop and Alicia Witt's next to me. She's pretty hot. And she's holding a torch. Like in the right hand, like a Luciferian torch, she's holding it like next to me. It's really weird. She's also in four rooms. Alicia Witt is.
Mm-hmm.
She's in four rooms. She's in the part where they try to call the witches. Try to call Madonna and the other witches. Try to call Diana, the goddess Diana.
Artemis, yeah.
Yeah. So I always look at that like, you know, I try to explain this thing. I use myself as my own like resonating star instead of like picking one. You know, and I guess Andres could do that too. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like use yourself as the star resonator or whatever, as above, so below, in the movies, in the sky. You know, however you want to look at it. And I just use myself because I've met a lot of people. I just met Bobcat last week. That was awesome. That was really awesome. You know who Bobcat is, right?
Oh, of course. Police Academy. That takes me back.
It's fucking awesome.
But he doesn't talk like that all the time, though, right?
No.
That's his stick. He talks totally. Yeah, he says, normal. Yeah. Is this every time
he says people freak out when I'm talking? Huh?
Is this every time I've heard him? I can only remember him sounding like that with that voice that Bobcat does, you know. So yeah, you met Buzz Aldrin. See, the thing is, like, I'm like, wow. Certain people, there's just shit I would love to drop on them and see what they think, like, as far as like discoveries that I've made that I wonder to myself so frequently whether or not they're intentional or not. So like,
yeah.
I'm looking at like Lady Gaga's albums. Every one of her albums I'm pairing with a film that's like absolutely flawless, that like I followed a set of clues that are very direct to get to what I'm playing them with. And so I'm just like, oh man, I wish I could, you know, like ask her. Fuck. I wish I could, you know, like present that to somebody that would actually like, and I'm like, I don't know. Like, you know, Alan, you were saying with that Japanime movie, you told me about that and I would like to see it, you know, and you're like, but nobody's watched it, you know? And I'm just like, I was posting all this stuff about Lady Gaga albums, you know, and I've shown the people who I show them to who are around here, they're just like, oh my God, this is crazy. This is incredible. Who's seen this? And I'm like, no one's probably going to see it because no one's going to take the time to do the experiment because it's fucking Lady Gaga. Though when you're watching it with a film, it puts it into an entirely different context, and the degree to which it aligns, both with like scene changes, with music changes, with every single thing that she's saying being 100% applicable to what's going on in the film, you know, it's just,
what, like, are you syncing it up to? What film?
So there's four. So the first one, the Fame, with Party Monster, which is, you know, Seth Green and Macaulay Culkin rave killer movie.
Yeah, every time I turn it on, I and then I turn it off.
But it's like it's a whole other thing. It's like it's a different, it puts both the film and the album into a different context, you know. The Fame Monster and the 80s version of Metropolis, just absolutely perfect, and it only gets better as it
How'd
goes
you do
along.
that? How'd you do that? Did you
She
just
let
happen to put that in at the same time or
no no
what?
no no she lays out like a ton of clues. So like there's all these correspondences, and so you know like I'm taking what I'm studying with my teacher with Kabbalah, and I'm applying it to pop culture, and that's these are actually what came out of it. And so I've had the opportunity to show the Metropolis one to my rabbi, and you know she, and this is the thing, she speaks Hebrew repeatedly in her albums, and it's very blatant if you know what she's saying. So like you listen to Bloody Mary and she's like dom dom da da dom, and it's blood. She's saying blood over and over again in Hebrew. If you listen to
Huh.
So Happy I Could Die, she's saying Ehyeh Ehyeh, which is I am that I am. And it's symbolic to the film when you're looking at the symbolism of the Shekhinah getting replaced by the handmaiden, and thus forming the Kabbalistic tree as we know it, is the original symbolism of the film, which she's obviously aware of, but she's approaching it in this really interesting way. And so Marie Antoinette, Sofia Coppola's Marie Antoinette, and Born This Way, absolutely flawless. And the most recent one is Venus in Furs, the 1995 version of Venus in Furs with her album Art Pop. And yeah, it's like a whole, it's you know, I mean, my girlfriend knows it because she sees my whole process building up to figuring them out, and I'm just totally immersed in Lady Gaga, you know, and like her symbolism and stuff and what's being communicated, and I'm looking at the films that are using the same correspondences, and so they meet through occultism, and that's how I get the, you know, the relationship. And so, and then it's repeating the album with the film repeatedly until I get it to land in the way that it lands. And so it's to the second is important, you know. So like I might play something five times, be about feel like, well, it feels like it wants to go, but it's just not happening, and then boom, there it is, you know. So I've been really excited about that, but nobody want, you know, it's like Jason Barrera just watched Metropolis with the Fame Monster last night, which I really appreciated, because I was like on Facebook, I'm like, you know, I put up all these posts with these Lady Gaga syncs, and I don't think anybody's trying them. Because it's Lady Gaga, you know, and everyone has their conception. But I and
Well, definitely.
yeah, I mean,
What was that?
Jason Barrera has a completely different scope on what's being communicated, but that's absolutely understandable because everyone's going to have their own take on it, you know, and what the artist is about. Everyone has their own ideas of the artist and where they're coming from, you know. We're kind of like nerding out on it because he's all about Katy Perry and I'm about Lady Gaga, so it's kind of he's all talking about the Katy Cats and I'm talking about the little monsters, I guess. So but I'm just amazed at how little people like take a critical approach to something in pop culture. Because it's like it's put on a certain level, and everyone can, there's like a consensus reality that's relating to it in a certain way. Whereas I feel that it's got far more depth than people are giving it credit. And that the way that she's masquerading as it being this completely egoic, kind of like glamorous thing is like a joke in a way. It's very Crowleyan because it's being the fool. It's like playing out the exact thing that everybody is expecting it to be, but then meanwhile there's something else happening, you know, that's got real depth to it. And so yeah, I've been thinking a lot about that.
I definitely some artists are more blatantly occult than others. I mean, Jay-Z's like super occult. I mean, he wears the what the do what that wilt sweater. Got a supposedly he's got a chamber of reflection, which I would love to have. I'm jealous. And Kanye West got him like a, I don't know if it was gold plated or what, but he got him a skull for it. So
I
I know
was.
they're
Do
all
you know
into
who
the
Gary
occult.
Lachman is?
I don't know.
Gary Lachman's like a writer on Esoterica and things like that. And I interviewed him for 42 minutes about a week or two ago, and he told me that there was apparently some sort of, within the fundamentalist Christian crowd, there was a thing because I think it was Justin Bieber or one of Jonas Brother. I don't know pop culture.
The right. Jonas Brother wore an Aleister Crowley shirt.
Yeah, that's what he's saying. He's like, what do you make of it? Like, you know, I could be completely biased here, but I get the impression those guys are not creating high art. They could just be trying to catch on to a trend or, you know, have some edgy quality or some shit like that. So it's like, just because someone incorporates Esoterica or wears an Aleister Crowley t-shirt doesn't make them highbrow art in my mind. But at the same time, I get what David's saying, where someone could be playing a really elaborate performance art.
Right. It's performance art. She's taking on the character of the Scarlet Woman from the Book of Revelations, and she's been doing that since the beginning. And that's what I find interesting, that it's not like something that she came up with along the way. It's like, no, from the get-go, this is her character. It's why she's named Lady Gaga, you know. It's from the Queen album Radio Gaga, a song that is all about, like, they have Metropolis as the music video because the song is about Babylon. And so Gaga being like Goo Goo Gaga, being like everyone has to go back to basically baby talk when the tower falls, they lose their ability to speak properly, you know, or to relate to one another. And so it's
Babylon.
What's that?
Babylon. That's where the Babylon came from.
Yeah, exactly.
Where people babble.
Babble. So you babble. And so Gaga, babble. I get it, you know. And then she's all about Metropolis, so she's got the symbolism of the robot that is her public persona, as far as I can tell. This is my take on it.
Didn't Beyonce actually wear that?
The outfit? That? The outfit from Metropolis?
She wears... Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me. Looks, I haven't seen
She looks like the woman from it.
Yeah, Maria.
Yeah, she at once. It literally looks just like it.
I believe it, because it's what they're trying to communicate. And it's like a hero with a thousand faces, but for the Scarlet Woman, you know. Everyone wants to be Marjorie Cameron.
I want to be Marjorie Cameron. So. I love Marjorie Cameron. My cat, I had a cat named Marjorie Cameron. I gave her away though, but the woman kept her name. I think the woman's a Christian, so it's funny.
So Marilyn Manson, they're like doing the exact same thing. So Marilyn Manson made all these album movie syncs that are, from my understanding, are they have to be intentional. Like certain ones in particular, like Holy Mountain and Hollywood. It's like the pairing is just really like, and I figured that out. I had this insight into it, and I did the experiment, and it just did the thing I was wanting it to do, and I was like, holy fuck. And then long afterwards, I find out that Alejandro Jodorowsky, who directed the film, is very close with Marilyn Manson, and he actually did his wedding with Kat Von D, or Rose McGowan, I forget. I think
Rose McGowan.
Rose McGowan, yeah. And so Kat Von D, is that the fucking... LA Inc. or something. I don't know. I could be confused.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, he did their wedding. And so I'm like, okay, this is after I pair this film with this album and it's perfect. And then I read a quote from Alejandro Jodorowsky saying that this particular album is the most important thing he's ever done in his life, you know, and all this stuff. I'm just like, okay, there you go. They both use sigil magic. Very directly. Every project comes down to a glyph. Lady Gaga and Marilyn Manson. So Marilyn Manson plays out the archetype of the Antichrist. That's his whole deal, you know, and relates to the beast of the apocalypse. And so she's then relating as the Scarlet Woman and following the same exact procedure as he did in doing so. And so I find that really, really interesting.
Do they have an L. Ron Hubbard?
No, there's no L. Ron Hubbard. I don't know who's L. Ron Hubbard yet. I think that's Tom Cruise. It's more in the Actors Guild and John Travolta. And I wondered about that because it's not just like these guys are Christian Scientists. It's also that they're playing out an archetype through their film. Is that the archetype? You know? I don't know. Or at least how
Have you
they.
ever seen, there's a clip in one of the Michael Sears documentaries, and it's talking about Elvis, and he's talking about how, like, sometimes unintentionally people will play out the archetypes of, like, the Sun King or whatever, and he's got, like, Elvis with this big sun on his back, like, in his outfit, and he talks about something about drowning. I can't remember. I'll send it to you. It's pretty interesting, though.
Well, Elvis totally does that. He's known as the king of rock and roll. He dies in the bathroom, which if you look at any alchemical image of where the king dies in the
He
bathtub,
died at 42.
there's a debate as to what book Elvis was reading when he died, and it's either a book about tantric sex or a book about lost mythology of Jesus. Which either one is you have this idea of the king dying to rise up spiritually, whether it be Kundalini or any of these things, and there's just a whole host of things like that. The fact that whatever, so that's I could go on and on and on, but yeah, it's I don't think in those cases that's intentional. I think what I am open to, perhaps someone starts to resonate with something, and perhaps it starts off on some conscious level, and then it gets out of hand. Why does someone becoming president, they take on the energetic and the psychic shrapnel of an entire world, that all eyes on you means that people get to project their archetypes onto you. People, you might play with one thing, but there's 7 billion other people projecting onto you. And I think that's partially why you see presidents. And I don't say this in defense of presidents. I'm just talking objectively here. I think that's a good one of the main reasons why you see presidents always age very quickly in an office. Every time you see someone get elected, time they're like this, full,
Yeah.
campaign
You can
trail.
definitely see that in Obama.
Oh yeah, and then suddenly
He
their
looks
hair
horrible.
turns gray and they look
Yeah.
fucking ghostly.
Yeah.
I
Fuck,
don't think
that's
that's
true.
necessarily because Obama's working so hard to, save the world. He's fucking, or is he up at night regretting that he's bombing children in Afghanistan? I don't really get that from him, but maybe. I think if you
Or he might
regret
have a
it,
lot of He might have a lot of occult things going on too that he's got to keep secret,
right. I guess
and
that's
the
like my thing is that.
CFR and all that shit.
Oh, totally, yeah. So I guess my thing is like
He knows all kinds of stuff.
I think if you were really upset about, people dying around the world, you would stop bombing them. But
Yeah.
that being said, yeah, there's all sorts of things that we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. And I do think that also takes place on a certain psychic or astral level. Obama's a great example for even the fact that they tried to create this sex symbol out of him as a way to sell him as a president. And there were all these women saying, oh, I'm dreaming about having sex with Obama. Now, whether that's just a marketing scheme or people being stupid or however I want to respond to that on a very practical level, on this other level, it also means that there are all these people who are projecting onto him and making him into their fantasy, whether he's a fantasy of this messiah figure, the guy who's going to overthrow the Bush regime, the guy who's going to save the world, or the Christian fundamentalists and white supremacists who want to make him into an antichrist. People around the world are all projecting onto this one person, and that's got to take a psychic toll. I'm sorry, I don't see how that doesn't happen.
We gotta wait for your book a whole other year now before we can. Do you know about Alan's book, Chris?
No.
Alan?
Oh, it's basically what I'm talking about. Yeah, it's just the idea of this king of resonating with this king archetype. And it's something I've come to realize very much on a very small scale. This is why I can only imagine what it's like on a larger scale. But since doing the Sync book, I became in this weird sort of way, and on a very small scale, some sort of kind of spokesman for the Sync movement. And say that in a egotistical level, I'm saying that in a the reality of the situation is people started to contact me as such and treat me as such, and it has very serious psychic tolls that I was not prepared for. You know, whether that's, you know, I get great emails, people saying we really love what you're doing, get emails of people saying you're the Illuminati New World Order agenda and all sorts of shit that people
want
to project.
I want
on.
Those emails. I want to get emails like that. I'd be like, yes, I am.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am. Oh, I got a friend that's a 32nd degree Mason. He wants me to try to join. You there?
Yeah, we're here.
Yeah,
okay.
I'll
just turn off
pull
the microphone
up for you guys. I'm going to pull up for you the email I got yesterday. And you can have fun with it as you like.
Oh, yeah.
Give me 1 second here.
You mentioned me and say the devil. Because that's what I look at myself as. I think I'm like the devil of the book. I've read the Saint book, and I just feel like I'm the devil.
You know...
Okay. I just got this email yesterday, but it was from the Red Ice interview I did in October of 2011. This was the first sync book. Okay, I thought this was a response to the second one. Oh, well. Alan Abadesa, Red Ice interview, October 23rd, 2011. After 20 minutes of your interview, I was forced to stop listening to your drivel. That, with your lack of understanding of the principles of synchronicity and even less understanding of the use of logos by representatives of the power structure you somehow gained an audience, is a perfect example of why those people who grew up post-9/11 or as a result of 9/11 are perhaps the most ignorant, fearful, mediocre, and yet somehow self-centered and, of course, self-serving to the point of becoming immediately indignant when your ignorance of how the world works is pointed out to you. Group of 20 to 35-year-olds America has ever produced. I'll give you 2 clues as to how I knew where you were headed with your incredibly narrow worldview. Clue number 1, when you said you weren't raised in any religious context and proceeded to espouse that randomness is as likely a possibility for the use of various logo designs as planned out designs, and use a series of fallacious arguments to back up this conjecture. In other words, how the hell would you know if what you're saying is true if you haven't a background in how symbols are used in conjunction with language to coalesce large numbers of people? So without a religious background to give you a sense of how order among people is created and maintained, an anthropologist, archaeologist, sociologist? Clue number 2, if you ever, all caps, came remotely close to pulling back the veil on what's really happening, you'd instantly begin to feel the unpleasant feeling of pushback. Have you ever pondered how you've gained any popularity, or is that just another happy accident too?
We've gained popularity?
Right. Yeah, I get a check every month from the New World Order for $0.00. Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm not struggling in obscurity and working a fucking day job 12-hour shifts. No, who's supporting me? Who's promoting me? Fuck that. But... you know, on the other hand, I mean, so, like, whatever, there's all sorts of things in here of, you listen to 20 minutes and you think you know me, yet you're saying I have the narrow worldview and don't have...
Is that it? Just, is that the letter? Is that it?
That's the whole email.
Okay,
Because I don't have a religious background, how would I know how symbols are used in conjunction with language to coalesce large numbers of people? How about because I'm an American and I grew up in the fucking propaganda capital of the world? You know, whatever. So I considered all these different things that I could respond, but I don't even have the time to respond to the nice emails I get. I get really nice emails, too. So, and I unfortunately don't have the time to respond to those people.
Oh, they said they turned it off after 20 minutes?
Yeah.
That's too bad. They may have heard something else, you know? I mean, I don't know. It's kind of, they didn't follow through. It's like, I've had that issue a lot when I'm having a conversation with somebody and I'll be talking about something that they're not familiar with, which I mean, I don't need to talk to people who are familiar with everything I'm saying, but when they have a really strong reaction and they give their opinion, but there's no familiarity with the subject matter and they have like this really strong opinion, that's a huge pet peeve of mine. 'Cause I'm like, but you don't know what, like, you haven't studied what I'm talking about. So how do you know? Why are you so certain that what I'm saying is full of shit if you've never like read about it or looked into it. It's like that's the kind of thing. So
people are just like that. Or if, like, people, that's how people are.
I'm like, talk about a movie.
You can't let it.
And they're like,
can't let it get to you.
They're like, that's a terrible movie, but they haven't seen it or something. It's like, what? Well, you have to see it before you can say, you know, like, it's like, no, but I know. It's like, oh, okay. Well, shit. Sorry.
Some people are just like that. You just got to let it go.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But this is what I'm saying is, so these things come to me. I mean, I started getting flack for apparently Kyle Hunt started some sort of white supremacy website.
Did he?
Apparently
so.
No
way. No.
Yeah. So, well, whatever. I haven't looked into it. But so then I was told that I'm promoting white supremacy because I put him in the sync book.
And the sync book was white.
And I think I'd make it very clear at the beginning of both books that I don't agree with a lot of the things that are in here. I'm trying to present a cross section of ideas, but whatever. Yeah. So yeah, it's like, I don't even know where to start. And it's ultimately what it comes down to is it balances out. 'Cause you get as much nice stuff as you get nasty stuff. I actually get a lot more nice stuff than I get nasty stuff. But when the nasty stuff comes, it's particularly nasty.
Some people don't read their reviews, actors.
Right.
Yeah.
Some people don't watch their movies.
Actors don't read your reviews.
It's like Johnny Depp doesn't watch his movies, you know? He sees the premiere and then that's it. He's just like... And I guess he walked into the editing room in one of his early films and like started like having a reaction to the way that they're editing it. And then caught himself and was like, what am I doing? This isn't my place. I'm just here to act. Which is probably the reason why he's as prolific of an actor as he is the fact that he's not, he's just doing it as he's doing it and not looking back, you know? I could see the value of that kind of approach of just like, you do your thing, you don't, you know, you just keep doing it.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not gonna stop. And but I guess what I'm saying is, to take this conversation sort of back where we started, it's like, you know, if you're, I'm getting a very, I don't see myself as having any sort of authority, power, anything. I'm just a guy who works really hard to put together a website and some books and some podcasts. I'm getting a very small amount of emails compared to, I'm sure, someone who has a much higher profile. But I'm saying that has a psychic toll. I can only imagine if you're a, you know, people make fun of like a Britney Spears for going crazy and shaving her head and, you know, having a mental breakdown. People love to see their celebrities fall, but it's sort of built into this, is this, you know, an Illuminati agenda to raise up a pop starlet and then destroy them in some sort of ritual sacrifice? Or is it the population themselves doing this because they love to see someone rise and then go, once they, oh, this person's so great, you put them on this pedestal, and then you're like, fuck that, I'm sure they have flaws too, you want to tear them back down.
It's like
the Tower of Babel. You want to see something being reached for, and then when you feel like someone's reached further than you have, you want to tear it back down.
She might have broke some programming or something. That's what I think.
So do you think Britney Spears is some sort of mind control?
Yeah, I think all of them are.
I think all they're holograms. They don't even exist. No, I'm just kidding.
They exist. No, I'm open to the idea. I'm definitely open to the idea. I'm curious. What do you think, Chris?
I don't know. I mean, I've heard things about like Bob Hope being a handler, and I can't remember who it was. What's his name? Tiger Woods had a handler. I believe some of that shit.
Well, they definitely have handlers as far as there are people who are orchestrating their career and making decisions for them, what they're going to wear, what they're going to say, how they're going to act. But is that from a promotions standpoint, some larger, like, you mind control Tiger Woods in order to mind control the population. I mean, in a practical sense, that is true, because you handle, as a marketing person, you are shaping and molding the perception and image of Tiger Woods so that you can sell Gatorade and whatever. So you are definitely mind controlling the population. Hey, I'm going to create this powerful symbol to use it to get inside your head and then associate it with products that I can sell to you. But does that also go into a larger scale? This is where I start to question it is the occult angle. You know, are they making a Tiger Woods to brainwash the population for some quote-unquote Luciferian or Masonic New World Order, One World Religion? I find that very hard to believe. The fact that they're doing it to sell you Gatorade and high fructose corn syrup and shit like that, I totally, I'm right there with you.
Yeah. I don't know, you can just kind of see it in them. I mean, they definitely, I mean, like, Rihanna was reading, like, reading an occult book. The weirdest thing I ever heard was Lindsay Lohan. And this gets into a lot of stuff, but just think, like, Charles Manson, Rosemary's Baby, that kind of shit. And Lindsay Lohan was going to be in a film about Charles Manson,
right,
where she played, what's her name, Sharon Tate.
Yep.
And she freaked out on... she freaked out. This is her words, basically. She freaked out on Twitter and took a picture of this guy, like walking through her yard or whatever. And she wrote, "They have Masonic spies or something like that coming to get me," or something like that. And then she freaked out even more. And she said she was going to throw away all of her occult books and burn them. So,
wow.
I think some people get into it and can't handle it. I mean, you have to think, even like Mick Jagger, if you ever read, you ever read the Book of Lies, the Disinfo book, the Book of Lies?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They totally. Got an article in there about Mick Jagger and how he was supposed to play Lucifer in Kenneth Anger's Lucifer Rising. His brother wound up taking the job, Chris Jagger, and he plays Lucifer in it, but it was supposed to be Mick Jagger.
Oh, that
but
was...
at some point, Mick Jagger took all of his occult books and put them in a pile and burned them.
That was the Invocation of My Demon Brother, though, right? Which was the other footage that was supposed to go to Lucifer Rising, but was separated.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the guy who actually ends up playing Lucifer in Lucifer Rising is not Mick Jagger's brother, but someone else, Bobby...
Busolini or something?
Yeah, Bobby Busolini, who is actually connected, who actually started his own quote-unquote family and was... friends with, and sometimes rivals with, Charles Manson as far as getting followers to do your bidding.
It's actually believed that was the reason.
I don't know. Honestly, I think that Charles Manson had nothing to do with that.
But you know what they say, and there's a really strong case for, is that the Tate-Bianca killings were in response to the arrest of Bobby Busolini, in order to make it appear that it was a copycat killing to clear Bobby. So that gets really interesting in terms of the OTO. That's the correlation with the OTO and the Manson killings and, you know, Polanski and everything else. It's kind of heavy.
Yeah, I don't know. I could listen to Charles Manson talk for hours.
I
could listen to him sing for hours, too.
I
love him. I love him so much. I learned about Abraxas through him.
Yeah.
It's like his god that he worships. And Carl Jung said Abraxas sits above God and the devil. And I want to sit above God and the devil, so.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, if you look into Manson's stuff, I mean, it's on point with a lot of what we talk about, whether that be synchronicity, psychology, esoterica, philosophy. Like, there's a really strong correlation between his stuff and our stuff. The question would be, if, whether it's Manson or someone else, is able to take that and then pervert it. So basically, strip you of your ego, if the idea of turn zone, stripping of your ego to become a more enlightened being is one thing, stripping you of your ego, whether that be Charles Manson or MK Ultra or anybody, stripping you of your ego so they can reprogram you as a Manchurian candidate or serial killer or whatever, that's obviously not something I'm down
It's
with.
the prerequisite of any cult is to first strip you of your ego and identity. That's why you turn in any identification, physical identification, change your name, all of that. Are you familiar with the fact that Charles Manson's cell block was one of the primary places they used prisoners for MK Ultra experimentation before any of this went down? That he was, while he was serving prison time before
Oh,
anything happened.
absolutely, yeah.
So that's like there's a stronger case for him having been fucked with by MK Ultra than like most people because
You
of
ever
that.
read Sirhan's diary?
I haven't read his diary, but he says straight up, I was
Yeah.
programmed by MK
The
Ultra.
last thing he remembers
Yeah.
before he blanked out and can't, pull anything back is a woman in a polka dot dress who pinched him.
Yeah, the weirdest thing about that is there's a girl and she's sitting on the stairs in the hotel and she sees a woman in a polka dot dress and she starts the woman in polka dot starts to scream, we got him or something. And then there's these interrogation tapes that you can listen to. They're fucking so hard to listen to.
Oh, I listened to those just a few weeks ago. Yeah, I know exactly what
Yeah,
you're talking about.
it's the girl who saw the polka dot dress girl. They're interrogating her and like, what did you see? She's like, I saw a girl with a polka dot dress running down saying, they got him, they got him. He was like, no, you didn't. And she was like, no, she's really naive and stupid. She doesn't get that the cops tell her like, no, you didn't see anything.
Right.
And she keeps crying and like, I saw it with my own two eyes. And he's like, no, you didn't. No, you didn't. It's really fucking brutal, man.
Yeah, he's like,
But
why are
that's
you
how they are.
lying? Why are you
Well,
lying?
yeah.
Stop saying. And I don't think I actually didn't find that she was naive and stupid. I found that she was, because she held her own for a long time. She's saying, listen, I don't know what you're saying, why you're calling me a liar, but this is what I saw. I know what I saw. And then after hours of this, she finally breaks down and she's like, all right, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I didn't see it. Maybe I didn't see it. Because he's like, why are you lying? You didn't see that. You didn't see that. And finally, after hours, she breaks down. She's like, all right, maybe you're right. Maybe I didn't see that. And he's like, all right, just sign this thing saying you didn't see that. It's fucking crazy and really brutal. I'm with you. And that guy, the guy who's interrogating her, also worked for a CIA front. So he actually wasn't even in the California police anymore. He had gone on to the CIA and came back just to interrogate this woman.
That's fucked up. I remember just feeling sick to my stomach when I heard that.
Yeah, that's hard to fucking process. But the things we started this conversation, or one of the things we started this conversation with, the idea of we deal with some really heavy topics. These are not easy things to cope with. Whether in our private lives, studying these sort of macabre subjects or conspiracy stuff. I mean, I feel like the conspiracy stuff itself is an ego stripping process because you're learning that the world that you know is a lie. Even if you're just the average American walking down the street, you're eating a Cheesecake Factory, and one day you find out, oh, guess what? We're actually, taking over these countries and killing people and imposing dictators and all these things. Oh, we're spying on our. We actually have no rights. Oh, we've put this tiny little box that you can have a free speech zone. And once you start realizing these things, your whole world is shattered. And the conspiracy culture, this is why you have guys like Alex Jones can start their own cult because of the ego loss associated with conspiracy culture. At the same time, I don't think that just because a guy like Alex Jones or someone could create his own controlled opposition cult doesn't mean to me that a lot of these things aren't true. So this is the hardest part, is how to stay in these dark waters for the sense of a practical sense of knowing what's going on, there's almost a need, to use the metaphor of The Shining, there's almost a need to go into room 237 so you're not naive. At the same time, the fact that this takes a really heavy toll on the psyche is something that doesn't get discussed enough. I mean, you have the bullshit mainstream media saying if you're into conspiracy, it's a mental illness. That's how they pose it, saying if you're into this, you're mentally ill. It's basically a way of saying don't pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Anyone who says he's there is crazy. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is once you look behind the curtain, once you've seen the creature in room 237, you're forever kind of scarred, and that is hard.
Did you guys see Kubrick's daughter at the JFK 50th anniversary thing in Dealey Plaza? Did you watch that interview? You saw it?
I didn't watch the video yet, but I saw that she was there.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, so it's Alex Jones being Alex Jones, which is really annoying. But you know, she's giving her spiel and she feels really strongly. She got punched in the spine several times by the police there, for standing with a sign. You know, they did a changing of the guards, had the sheriffs come in, and then they pushed all the people back for no fucking reason, just because they could, you know. And she's really worked up, you know, because it's just like, wow. And she's talking about her father and things, but she was saying, she made a distinction, which I really appreciated, because Alex Jones is repeating over and over again these evil people talking about, you know, the fucking, you know, people kind of behind the scenes, whatever, the rogue aspect of government, which he seems to consider to be the entire government for some reason. But saying that they're evil. And she made the distinction that she's like, I don't know if I would call them evil. I would qualify it and say that they're insane. She's like, you're dealing with insanity up there at the top, and that they don't have any actual connection to what it is that they're actually doing. They're removed from the reality, and therefore it's more reasonable to, if you're going to call them something, you call them crazy, which is kind of ironic with what you just said about that, you know, the mainstream media would consider conspiracy theorists to be crazy or to call them crazy. Whereas here, you have a conspiracy theorist who's the daughter of Stanley Kubrick saying that the heads of these organizations must be crazy. So,
right. At what point does it become name calling of they call us crazy, we call them crazy, they call us evil? You know, Chris, you mentioned when 2003, you talk about these things and people getting really nervous about it. I also encountered that, and I actually had police come into my house to see what I was up to.
Really?
And you know, these things. How do I say this? What I realize is that these are people thinking these guys are evil. I don't think the low level person who's breaking into my apartment is, I don't know, some sort of Illuminati puppet master. I think it's probably the way, just like any cult would do, the cult of police and the cult of federal government and all these things tells you these guys are a danger, we have to check them out. These people might be evil. So it's, in the sense, the police look at the citizenry as evil or crazy or dangerous. And we look back at them and go, those people are evil or crazy or dangerous. I guess what I'm asking is, at what point does it become name-calling? Can we say we're right, they're wrong? Or is it some, do we have to zoom out a step further and say the whole...
I think the key to it is just not generalizing.
Right.
Because you generalize people, you really shut yourself off to a lot of nice people. You might enjoy. I know a few cops that I think are cool, you know, or all right.
Yeah, same. You know? I've known people on all sides of the law. I'm friends with Christians and Satanists. I'm friends with, you know, libertarians and socialists and communists and, you know, conservative Republicans. I'm friends with.
How do you get along with communists? Because I haven't figured that one out. I don't know how I can ever get along with a communist. I'm so Hoover, it's not even funny, man, when it comes to
No, it's the same thing. It's like ultimately, it's just realizing that that's where that person's head is at, you know, and unless someone really does something to be a dick to me, I'd have very little tolerance for someone being an asshole to me. Like if
Yeah.
someone wants to push their ideas on me or things like, and that's true for, you know, the Christian housewife who wants to tell me, who keeps telling me I need to be saved by Jesus, or the communist who keeps telling me I need to, you know, join the workers' revolt. There comes a point where it's like, hey man, I respect this, what you're into. That ain't my thing. Like, I'm
Yeah.
respecting you, please respect me.
Yeah.
And I feel like as long as you have those good boundaries, but this is the thing is, I've heard you talk about this a number of times, and shouldn't be such an outlandish thing. Say you can be friends, you know, well, you can be a conspiracy theorist and still have friends that work in government or work in the police because they're human beings. It
Yeah.
doesn't mean you support this institution. It doesn't mean anything like that. It doesn't mean, you know, like fucking Jan Ervin saying that we have CIA handlers. If I say I have a friend who works in the government, it doesn't mean that I'm my subtle way of saying I have a CIA handler. It's saying, no, I know people who are human beings. And one of the things that really gets me with the Alex Jones sort of patriot movement is that there, to me, it's like when you create a civil war. I am very much against the police state. That doesn't mean that I want to be against every single policeman, because most of those people are just regular guys who, unfortunately, are working for this very fucked up thing. And it may come a point where they're gonna try and put a gun on you. It doesn't, you know, that's a very real possibility that you should be aware of. And at the same time, to treat them as somehow not human, or that they're that you're there's a war and they're on different sides, to me is basically like a civil war, brother against brother. Realize that they're a human being, and that maybe you can try and talk to them and try and make them realize that there's no reason for them to support this kind of. I got harassed by police a few years ago, and I happened to have like a bunch of you know, like anti-war literature. I've been doing this stuff, and these like cops are busting me, and I have all this anti-police state stuff on me, and they're like, "What do you got in the bag?" And I was like, "I'll show you what I got in my bag if we could talk about it." And I end up sitting there, you know, talking to them for like 2 hours, and you could tell one of the guys was a total dick, and one of the guys you could see felt really fucking bad. He's like, "Oh man, yeah, that's kind of what we're doing, isn't it?"
They're actually playing out the epitome of what it is that you have reading material on.
Well, they have the cameras here in Baltimore. You go downtown, it's cameras everywhere. It's Orwell 1984 all over again.
Well,
It's
that's
everywhere.
everywhere anyway. I mean, that's very, yeah.
All right, well, I'm going to throw this out. You mentioned 1984. I'm going to put this out there for anyone who's listening. I will continue this out again and again and again. I have searched the internet for hours and hours and hours. Every few years, I look for this. Just, I would say, within, I don't know, probably 2003 was my guess, in New York City. So we had, obviously, 11 happens there. And you start getting like all this crazy shit with guys with machine guns and German shepherds on the trains. It turned totally into Nazi Germany. Then that starts to disappear and all the cameras come in, right? So the Nazi police state starts to go behind the scenes and the Orwell cameras come in. But they had all these posters for the next year saying, hey, if you see something, say something, report terrorism or suspicious
Yeah.
packages, blah, blah, blah. Well,
Yeah.
check it out. And I think it was about 2003, they do this whole ad campaign as part of that saying how effective their program was, this terrorist hotline. And the
Yeah.
poster was, last year, 1,984 people saw something and said something. So the fucking number 1984 on the poster last year, 1,984 people.
Shit.
And I didn't have a camera at the time.
Yeah.
And I have spent years looking for any proof of this. But every time, but I mean, I saw this ad for a year solid.
Yeah.
And I would sometimes just point to people and be like, point it out to people, like, does no one look? Is no one looking at what this says? So if anyone out there has any photographic proof of that, please, I beg you, send it my way.
Yeah, that's awesome. I have on my wall here a thing I pulled off right after 9/11. Shell, the gas station, had put all these things above every gas pump that says September 11th, we'll never forget, with a big American flag and the Shell symbol. And so, like, I pulled that off. I have it on my wall. And I was like, I'm like, I should have grabbed more. I should have, like, because it's just, like, it's so perfect. It's, like, fucking Shell, we'll never forget. Like, and what is this fucking, like, we'll never forget thing in the first place? Like, that feels like some kind of, like, manipulative thing to me in any way, that it's a matter of that. Like, it's like, well, you, like, if you have a, like, something you're really angry about, and it's, like, a vengeful thing, to be like, I'm not going to forget this, you know, it implies, it has the implication that somebody's to blame, and that you're holding it against them, and that you're
keeping it on your mind. Yeah, Alex Jones is the exact same thing. It's neurolinguistic programming. His thing is there's a war on your mind. And so it's implying they're attacking your consciousness, but what is he really saying? There is a war on your mind. You are constantly thinking about war.
Right. Right.
You have war on your mind. To have an idea of your mind is to be constantly thinking about it.
Yeah, the whole thing in the first place, Prison Planet, kind of like what it is, like, we've all kind of assumed that we agree with the intention of, like, what the whole movement is. If you're inclined that way, it's kind of like gathering up the goats or something and putting them into line. It's like you've collected the mountain goats and they're like being you know, kind of directed, if that makes any sense. It's like all the people that would be ascending the mountaintop are now in the pasture or something. Do you know what I'm saying?
Sure, yeah.
Are you guys familiar with the show Decode It?
No, I've never heard of that.
What is it?
Is it Decode It?
Oh, no.
There's this guy, his name is Brad Metzger.
Oh, I know who he is.
Uh-huh. He writes comic books and he writes fictional books. And he's got his own show. It's Decode It, where they try to, like, decode the Masons and find out their secrets and all kinds of shit like that. And the weird thing I found out about him is one of his books that he wrote, I can't remember which one it is, but George Bush Sr. gave him the idea for it because friends. And he's got a show on conspiracy theories.
And he's friends with George Bush.
So one episode, guess who they pick up?
George Bush.
Alex Jones.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they go back to the Bohemian Grove, and it's all about the Bohemian Grove, and they all get arrested. It's really weird. And he turns to George Bush. I don't know what to make of it. It's really weird. You go to Bohemian Grove, they get in a fucking boat, and they go in, like, on one of the sides, and they show him, like, getting handcuffed and all, and going to jail.
Hmm.
It's really weird.
Yeah.
Sometimes I have the thought, I don't know, like, if it's a mental thought or not, but I have the thought of, like, wouldn't it be, do you think it'd be possible that after, like, everybody started to catch on to all the shit, they aren't trying to just entice it?
Oh, totally. Totally. Yeah. But I guess the reason I'm pondering here for a moment is because what we were just saying, right? So it's like, I feel like I shouldn't be judged as a bad, I don't, you know, I, as judged as some doing something wrong for having a friend that's in the police,
And at the same time, if Alex Jones is hanging out with George Bush, that's a big red flag. So that's what I'm pondering for a moment. It's like, where do we draw that line?
Yeah.
But yeah,
I think it's a bunch of, I think it's a bunch of, I mean, you have to think about your normal life, right?
yeah.
And just think about all the shit you talk to different people about other people. And then you talk to those people about those people. And you all kind of create your own little conspiracy circles. And you might be involved in like five conspiracies at the same time in your own life, just regular everyday conspiracies. You're conspiring behind somebody's back, or, I've done it before, My mom and my wife used to always conspire shit and not tell me. So what makes you think that if people don't have power, they ain't gonna talk behind the our pinyon ass back? Like, they don't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Why would, how's that far-fetched to even think? I
No,
love the doc.
yeah.
Have you ever watched the documentary series Evidence of a Revision?
Yeah.
Yeah, Evidence of a Revision is great. And they got a really good article by, like, by Paranormal Magazine, like, last year. And he was basically saying how he wanted to do the JFK thing, but he started getting all this Jonestown shit and all this other stuff. And then he wasn't going to do it, but then he was like, I got to put this together. It was just too fucking nasty. But I love the beginning of that, because he plays, it's like 2, 3 minutes of just like everybody in the media and politics going, it was a conspiracy, 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 conspiracy. It's just everybody, George Bush, fucking Clinton, all of them. It's just them saying the word conspiracy over and over again. But that's,
That's actually where I listened to the footage of the interrogation tapes of the
Yeah, me too.
Okay, yeah, exactly. All right, so yeah, we saw the same thing. What I thought, there's some really interesting little factoids in there, things like that at Jonestown there were 33 children born at Jonestown. I thought was a funny one.
Alex
Um,
Jonestown? The Alex Jonestown massacre.
you're right.
Oh man, I was gonna say something.
I have so many shirts with Jim Jones on it, man. How wearing one that says cool, like Kool-Aid,
Oh
but it was
no.
played right anyway.
Oh yeah. That's terrible.
I love Jim Jones. I just love him. I think he's just a slick motherfucker.
What the flavor is?
I bet my testicles that he worked for the CIA,
Oh yeah,
and he was just a
most
front for the
likely he
CIA, and it was
didn't.
just a CIA experiment to see what they could do to us on a smaller scale. That's all it was. That's literally what it was. And I bet you $1 million that he lived, because if you listen to the recording, because he left the recorder on when he told everybody, just take it, just whatever. I believe that like half of them didn't die from, this is what I believe. There's another good film about Waco that's really like that too, which really fucked up. But I believe half of them were alive. I believe Jim Jones was alive. I believe they came in there. I believe they shot Jim Jones, and then they killed all the rest of the people. And
That's
fishy.
really
And there's other things that are fishy. Like Waco's really fishy. They sell guns, and they take the guns away on the weekend to sell them at shows, because that's how they're making money. So they didn't have any guns in the house really when FDA or whatever got there. And he was on a radio show. What's his name? What's the guy's name?
Dave Koresh.
David Koresh. He was on a radio show at some point and waving a white flag out the window, trying to say he wanted to surrender. So that's really fucked up. I think they jumped the gun on that one. And
He
I mean,
changed
there's so
his
many
name
fucked
to
up
David
things
Koresh.
that
That's a symbolic
most
name.
people just don't know, because they don't research it. And yeah, sometimes like synchronicities will be there that are look at Lincoln and Kennedy. My youngest son named Lincoln Kennedy. That's my youngest son's name, and I did that because of the coincidences between the two. You've seen most of that, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's like 20 different synchronicities that are like totally profound and weird.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. There's a really good Waco documentary that I was trying to think of what it's called to recommend for people. But yeah, it's without a doubt. There's the reasons why. When I say I don't think everything is a conspiracy, like I don't necessarily think the Lincoln Kennedy coincidences are planned, that is synchronicity. I think, you know, you seeing these numbers is synchronicity. I think we deal with things, we understand there is something else at play. And at the
yeah.
same time, I'm not denying that people do things very intentionally and very often very fucked up things. So
I really tried to emphasize in my Sync Book 2 chapter that on a certain level, I think ultimately everything can be said to be a conspiracy because we're all conspiring to hold together our like projected representation of ourselves, which is like a coping mechanism to deal with our fear of death. So that our ego selves are literally like something that we need to enforce. It's not something that happens on its own. It's something that takes a lot of our energy in order to maintain. And it's also what keeps us from being our true etheric selves, right? So like, instead of being angels, we're literally like having to hold this solidified representational model of ourselves in place, and that we use the world for mostly for reference points, like objects in the world. How does this relate to me? How does this relate to me? Like completely compulsively. And that it's everybody doing that within themselves that projects like the consensus reality that we exist within, that literally our perceptions are molded by this compulsion. And so, I mean, that's my personal feeling about it, you know, that's how I relate to it. And I feel like that is also a link between a lot of the different schools. So like the psychoanalytical school, that's how it meets the occult school, is through the correspondences, because the basis of most mysticism has to do with correspondences. Like if you study Kabbalah, it's all about synchronicity. It's how does this relate to this? And then what can you extrapolate from that? And so our ego self is like held together by the same process that you can go to deeper and deeper levels with. Yet we generally stay pretty superficial with it. And so in that sense, you could say that every conspiracy theory you can come up with has this deeper conspiracy at its base, which is the conspiracy to basically uphold this limited self structure. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But I tried reading a Kabbalah before. I got a copy on it. And it basically said the only thing I took from it that I really liked was a couple things. The one, it was like basically if you take a rock mountain, it's still that mountain. You follow?
If you take what? Repeat that one more time.
If you take a rock from a mountain, it still is that mountain.
Yes.
If you take man or woman from God, they still are that God.
Right. You can't take away from the all, and you can't add to the all, and so everything is the same thing. Yeah. So even the
heavy though.
Yeah, because the implication is that everything that you can project, no matter how false it is, it's still of truth. I mean, so that's like every number is infinite. There is no difference. That's the basis for that idea. And that's the meaning of Pan. That's like not just like Pan worship, but how Pan was related, why like every Greek tragedy has that Seder chorus, is because it's a reminder that everything is of the same thing. So no matter how tragic you can get, if you were to come up with the worst tragedy ever, it's literally a song that's connected to the source. And so no matter how far you go, no matter how far you go, the universe remains your center. You know, you can't, the center is everywhere and the circumference is nowhere. And what are the actual implications of that, like emotionally? Like, what does that mean if you get that on like on the level of emotional intelligence? You know, I mean,
I don't know. I'm a chaos magician, and I kind of go along with the philosophy. I think it's in Lieber Psychonaut or whatever, and it's like basically, the God creates on these big scales. You know, like there's like a billion stars in the Milky Way galaxy, and then there's a billion galaxies that all have a billion stars, and then there's only the known universe, not even the unknown universe, and so on and so on. How many planets can be inhabited in something else or whatever? And basically, we chaos magicians believe, or some of us do, that a God that creates on that scale doesn't give a shit about what we have for breakfast.
Right.
I mean, that's where a lot of chaos magicians, we have problems connecting with something, because we don't really, we might believe in something, kind of agnostic about the whole thing, but you don't have something to grasp on that you can pray to, that these people have more of a religious belief
have in their life, because they really believe it. You know what I mean? They believe there's God and heaven and hell and all that stuff, and I don't, you know. And it's weird because I'm dealing with people on a daily basis that believe in those things, and I'm talking to them about things that are in depth and in opinion. There may be a bad opinion, I don't really know. From my reality tunnel, the way I look at it is, maybe I'm right, maybe they're right, but what if I'm right? You know what I mean? That's the way it seems. Or else I just don't think the things that would be going on in this world are would be going on as we talk. There's Israel, and they're bombing Palestinians, killing little Palestinian kids every day, mm-hmm. every fucking day. If you got kids and you see one of those kids and they look like your fucking kids, it fucking hurts.
Right.
And I don't like shit like that. You know, totally. Just that's why I choose not to really believe in anything much.
Right. I mean, the political side of it, and what, like, those things become an excuse, and it's obvious the superficial level to which they're relating to those ideas don't have much depth. Otherwise, they wouldn't be doing what they were doing with it. And to get into that whole area, it's like, that's like the first thing I'll say in an argument with somebody who's like defending what Israel is doing politically and how the United States is supporting them in terms of the Holy Land. It's like, well, you're saying that they want they're entitled to these territories because they're sacred, right? Like, that's the idea, is that it's the fucking promised land. Well, then why are you building factories and having the Palestinians work in them for fucking SodaStream and all these bullshit things if it was really because it's Holy Land? If it was Holy Land, why would you be building factories there when you get the land? Like, It's the most obvious hypocrisy ever, you know.
Well, I mean, I think that people ought to be scared of a lot of things, and I think one ought to definitely be scared of. They ought to be scared of Jews who think that they're the chosen ones and we're goyim or whatever the fuck they call us. And then you got Christians want to go over there and help them build shit, and eventually they believe they have to fight each other, and it's just fucking weird. It's just dumb fairy tale bullshit.
But just to clarify that thought, are you saying specifically the Jews who think they're sacred people, or anyone who thinks they're sacred chosen?
I would probably have a problem with anyone who thinking that. I don't think it's, but the Jewish religion. I mean, have you ever read any of the Talmud or whatever?
Well, okay. Just to be very clear on the Talmud, because this has come up a few times on the show, particularly with like Jan Irving. If you look at the Talmud is a very difficult book to understand, because it's literally many different viewpoints getting said, being presented at the table, and it has the most extreme viewpoints being presented. And so someone will have an idea and put it forth, and there'll be a section that's this premise, and right after that...
Are you saying it's why the sync book is not...
it's literally the.
I'm not supporting Kyle Hunt's anti-Semitism.
The Talmud is an argument between multiple people, and so it's purposefully composed of extreme viewpoints. And so what'll often happen on the internet is somebody will take a quotation from the Talmud of a certain viewpoint, and not show that much further along in the Talmud, it gives the complete counter argument to said viewpoint. And so they're like, well, what about this? And it presents every viewpoint as like, it legitimizes it. It gives the argument for why this would be why this would be a good idea or whatever. And then it goes along and completely gives a reversal. And so it's really easy to take that particular book out of context. If somebody takes something from the Torah, it can often be out of context too, because it can be in the middle of a story and it's one person's approach that's being presented, and it's not saying that that's the right one. Also, the fact that you're dealing with translations that can be really misleading, because you could take things in a completely different way. For instance, you said the chosen people, which is something that gets repeated over and over again, that Jews love to say, certain Jews love to say, is we're the chosen people, this is the promised land, it's our land, is that chosen people could easily be translated as those who choose. Do what thou wilt, like to have a choice.
Yeah.
Like, you could interpret that just as easily that way. Yet in the King James Bible, it's not presented that way. And most Jews don't relate to it that way, because that's not as exciting for them to be the people who execute the faculty of choice.
What about George Bush saying, I am the decider?
Well,
or if it, he also said, if I was a dictator, it'd be a whole hell of a lot easier.
Yeah, I remember that quote. That's terrible. He's not a dictator. I thought he kind of was. I don't know. Seemed like he did everything a dictator normally does, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, he was pretty bad. I think Obama pales in comparison to the surface. I think if you look deeper, wars was start. It's kind of worse than Bush.
Yeah.
And Bush was iffy on Israel at one point. There was one point in the, I guess I would say like early 2000s, there was one point where he was like, he said some like off the wall shit about Israel. It was really, I was kind of like, hey, that's kind of cool.
if you look at George Bush when he was campaigning for president, he actually said we shouldn't be the policemen of the world. He said that we shouldn't go around nation building. So again, it's like, yeah, it's like, what do you say when you're looking for the job, and what do you say when you're actually in the job?
Right.
You know, Barack Obama's saying we're gonna end these wars, and then you go out and just fucking send drones instead of.
Yeah. The weirdest thing is, if you ever see Bush give a speech when he was governor, he's like really well spoken, and like his lingo or whatever is like really good. But something happened to him. I think the pressure
cocaine.
Oh, totally. That's sometimes when I wonder if it's not intentional, because the fact that he is well spoken at the beginning and becomes an idiot, I feel like, is the same way Obama pretends to be a nice guy. Bush pretended to be an idiot.
What's Bush in the sink book? Is he the fool, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody. It's weird. I got this tarot deck. I got it from when I was with my wife. It's like an easy tarot deck, and it's got George the Fool in it too.
But I think, again, I think he, you know, this is obviously debatable, but whether or not he became that archetype or pretended to be is a question. It's still a question of. The fact that he was well-spoken and then suddenly he's like, oh, I don't even know how to open a door. I could possibly be trying to take over the world with bombs. I don't know what I'm doing.
An idiot.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
You ever hear that
story
about Henry Rollins?
What's doing? Huh?
He went over to visit the troops a couple years ago and he signed a bomb. That's why I hate him.
Oh, God. Yeah, I felt, what the fuck? Who cares about Black Flag? I'm sorry. I'm sure there's a lot of Black Flag fans out there, but, like, what was, I mean, I like TV Party, you know? I like their
classic stuff.
What's the
same thing, dude?
And I'm like, yeah, okay.
That's all I thought.
Damage was a good album. They came out with good albums, you know, like, back in the day, but who gives a fuck? Like, what is the message of Black Flag? Like, it's very shallow. It's very empty. More of a fan of Dead Kennedys if we're going to go there.
Yeah, I learned when I first started learning about politics, I got into like Noam Chomsky really heavy, and I got into Jello Biafra really heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I share the same views with Jello Biafra now. I don't think my views would be the same, but he really got me to. I learned a lot about politics listening to his albums, because he's got like all these albums out that are just spoken word.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, 3 hours long, him just raging on about the government and shit. Yeah, that's pretty. He came to Baltimore and I was supposed to go, but I didn't go. I wish I would have met him.
Yeah. I'm a huge Marilyn Manson fan. I love Marilyn Manson. And you know what? People can think what they want to about that. I felt like his music was extremely therapeutic for me, having been raised with like intense fundamental Christianity, which is, I'm sure, one of the big reasons I got into Crowley so young too, you know. I really like his view on politics. I find I resonate with very much, and I feel like he's actually kind of continuing on in somewhat of a lineage of people who have been. You know, really like, because musically to incorporate all of those things in like a poetic way is I feel like that's really important. That's why I love the Dead Kennedys so much. You know, they're just like, you look at their lyric sheet and it's like a novel. It's like, wow, this guy is like, and it means everything that he's saying, you know.
Well, I like Marilyn Manson to a certain degree. I like, he's got a real good video on bullying, like why people shouldn't bully people. And he's got
a real good quote about the internet. I can't remember it, but it's just basically like you use the internet as your middle finger, like you're supposed to. And he calls on the age of the new eon, you know, he calls on that in the quote. I can't remember the quote, though. But the only thing I kind of found weird about him is they made him a member of the Church of Satan. They made him honorary pope or something.
Early on, before anything.
And
I mean, that was like he had just come out of, you know, he was just had his first album, I think, at that point.
Yeah, but then he came out later and he was like, I learn anything from any philosophy that I can, if it be Satanism, Levian Satanism, or Christianity, whatever. Yeah. And if you ever read the Satanic Bible, one of the first things is Anton LaVey says in the Satanic Bible, he's like, this is not a philosophy. This is a religion. You know what I mean?
Then if you're going to break it down, then you say, well, what is religion? It's to be reunified. If you say that something is about reunification, then what are you talking about then? Because the whole premise of Lucifer is that he's the one archangel that won't bow before the Adam, of the archetype of man. And so he's not bowing before us, whereas the other angels are here to serve. You know, that's very significant.
I'm not religious. I don't really like religion. I have Do What Thou Wilt tattooed on my arm, but I mean, that's just, I got dot after it. It's because I'm not sure. But
well, there's no re-yoga. I love to say
I don't know.
There's religion to it assumes that something is broken apart. And that's the basis of the Tree of Life. So if you study the Tree of Life, you're looking at the Star of David literally spread apart. And then the opening in the middle, Da'at, is what Babylon emerges out of, is that split. So the split Adam is the basis of Kabbalah. And if you look at 16th century Kabbalistic texts, which is much different than European occultism, usually their focus is upon reuniting the tree. Whereas you can see the Clefotic tree is its purpose is to keep it spread apart so that Babylon can, you know, blossom and not collapse. It's how do we keep this tower in place as long as we possibly can, which is basically an erection. So you're looking at basically maintaining a hard-on is what government is supposed to be and what the religious structures are supposed to be and everything that's connected to them, including like corporations, which are literally, as far as I can tell, they're just sigil magic. You know, you have an intelligence that you're calling upon in order to help your things thrive, you know? And so that's like,
Have you ever read any of Tex Mars books?
I'm not familiar.
Tex Mars is like a Christian conspiracy theorist, and he's got all these books out that are really great. There's one called Codex Magica. There's another one called Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. It's about Jewish people. Mm-hmm. He's anti-Semitic.
Right.
But he's great. I learned so much about magic through him. Like, I started reading him, and that's how I got into magic, because he knows so much about magic. But he's got an ad in one of his books from Shell Station. And Shell, at some point, and maybe in the 70s or the 80s, they put out this whole brochure. It has like the Shell on it and everything, and then it explains how the Shell is Venus.
So oh, very yeah, yeah, yeah. That's really obvious.
Clear.
Yeah, that should be clear to anybody. One. Yeah, that's why I love that September 11th, we'll never forget, with the symbol of Shell, is it's the veiled mystery. Yeah. And so that's the female is the veiled mystery. Whereas the male is presenting the mystery. But it's a representation of the mystery. It can never be the mystery
itself.
Sounds
like my life, dude.
Right. Well, that's the meaning of the separation.
It really sounds like my life.
Yes. It should sound like everybody's life, because that's what we are. In order to exist as the tree, which is the Fibonacci sequence, is to take the Shekhinah away from the air so that it's no longer a static thing. Because, like, that's like, you know, I loved it when Deepak Chopra went on the Colbert Report, and it's so hilarious. It's like, you know, Stephen Colbert is just the greatest interviewer, like, in my opinion, because he just immediately just gives him the epitome of the argument of, like, he's like, well, you know, you want to go to heaven, like, right? And Deepak was like, nothing happens in heaven. It's static. Who wants that? And so that's like, why would we want to bridge the Tree of Life together?
You know,
the
head song?
What is it?
The head song, Heaven.
No, don't worry.
You guys know that song?
I don't actually.
I know a lot of other songs. This Must Be the Place is my favorite.
Oh God, it's a great song. God, I love that song.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but it's a song called Heaven, and it says, heaven is a place where nothing ever happens. You know, I tell you what, I actually have to get running in a few.
Yeah, me too.
Just to do I'll be a guest on a radio show in the next 15 minutes, so I gotta get myself, I gotta piss and get a glass of water or something. But I think I'm gonna end the song, I'm gonna end this show with that song. I think it'll be a good segue. But I want to, first off, thank you, Chris, for doing this today. And I really hope, you know, I know it's tough, and sometimes shit to pull over. It's not the easiest thing to find friends online, and so it's a weird little community we have. But just know, if you ever need anything, or if you ever want to come back and chat with us, you're always welcome. And I appreciate what you're doing, and I have a massive amount of sympathy and respect trying to turn this shit around.
Yeah, I'm working on it, day by day, minute by minute.
Yeah.
Real quick, there's this book I was reading like a couple months ago. I do read magic books every once in a while. I just can't really get into it right now. I'm hoping I can get a better attitude about it. But there's a book. Have you heard of The Picatrix?
It sounds familiar, but I'm not familiar with it.
Yeah, it's a magic book. But anyway, he started talking about heaven there, and they say that heaven is a perfect sphere.
Yes.
It's really weird.
Absolutely. Well, the sphere is the, the two tetrahedrons. Like, you hold together a sphere with those those pressure points, you know? Like, that's like, if you introduce distortion into a sphere, that's how you get the Tree of Life. So the distortion is the chaos. So chaos creates, it's a mixture of what we're existing within is an order happening simultaneously because it's counterbalancing the distortion. And so that's how you get the tree. And so like that's like why real intentional Kabbalistic work has to do with generating the sphere out of, you know, a division, which I really love and resonate with. And so when people are presenting Kabbalah without that, it, for me, it's just missing the whole point. And that's like when people relate to it as sorcery, they're not understanding that the basis of it is reconciliation, not maintaining the structure. It's destroying the structure as we know it. And so
sorcery is good. I was a sorcerer for like a month. I just tried to bend people's wills and stuff.
Yeah, well, abracadabra means Crowley, do as I say. Abracadabra in Hebrew means do as I say, which is...
Yeah, Aleister Crowley said that you shouldn't try to bend other people's wills because it leaves your citadel open.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But real quick, this guy I know, his name is Adam. He's a Christian. He goes up Starbucks, and I think you guys are really big at stuff. He does these like portraits with all these like nebulas in it, and he like puts stuff in front of it, like a lion or something. He has it all like tied together astrologically, and he's got a DVD out. It's on Google. It's called DC Sorcery. And there's some Christian guy talking in between it, but his stuff's really good. It touched on Aleister Crowley. Touches on all the stuff, all the shares, and how up different things, and their decahedron and all those things. And he always tells me whenever he sees me to stay away from Crowley. Like you're messing with Crowley, stay away. He knows I'm not going to. But it was weird one day I was talking to him, and I was like, you know, I'm really starting to think that Satan's Saturn, because that's what Aleister Crowley says. And he goes, oh, it definitely is. And I was like, what?
Well,
he just agreed with Aleister Crowley. What the fuck?
It's true and it's not true at the same time, because, you know, like they equate Keter with Saturn when traditionally Saturn was Malkut. And so the roots are its branches. You know what I mean? So like as the Klephotic tree, yes, As the tree itself, no. That it's actually the repression of Saturn. It's like a representational model of Saturn and not Saturn itself. So that's a very complicated thing to get into, and I don't understand it fully. But to recognize that Saturn is actually has a completely different role in the time that is to come, you know, it is the way it's referred to if you translate it, that gets repeated in a lot of the Kabbalistic texts, is they have this vision of like what things could ultimately be, yet there's what we exist within. So as it is now, yes, that's true. As it ultimately could be, no, it's
yeah,
it's
there's different. It's more complex than that, because, you know, what's funny to me is that's a really thing. It's something that's become really popular in this sort of weird fundamentalist Christian ideology that gets spread throughout the alternative research and conspiracy crowd. And I remember doing an interview once where I was talking for an hour and I'm trying to talk about how not all esoteric is bad and how not all coincidences within politics are actually part of a conspiracy. Sometimes there's synchronicity involved as well. And everyone's kind of like, okay. And then I got to this one point where I mentioned Saturn, or this one asked about Saturn. I was like, well, Saturn is, you know, a complex figure, and it's like there are good sides and bad sides to it. And some of them was like, whoa. I'm like, really? You're getting worked up over an astrological abstract. Like,
right.
That's the point we've come to, that this fundamentalist idea has so pervaded the alternative research community that you're worked up over an astrological abstract. But I would point out that Saturn has very positive aspects, and it also has, in its negative aspects and sort of satanic aspects, Saturn represents the sort of the power of nature that you can't overcome. So
yes,
there are certain things in this world that you are able to control, and then there are external forces and obstacles that you sometimes have no control over, and sometimes those are there to overcome, and sometimes those are just natural limitations, like a gravity or something like that. We don't call gravity equal. We just say this is a force of nature that we have to take into consideration in our everyday, especially if we want to build cars or airplanes or things like that. But even if you just want to jump up or climb on a ladder or whatever the fuck you want to do. So if you're climbing a spiritual ladder, you have to take into consideration this gravity. It's not necessarily evil. It's just a force. And, you know, that's, again, it's a much longer conversation. But I just as Satan, I don't think the figure of Satan is a particularly evil one or solely an evil one. It represents a force. And if you know, there's this idea that everyone wants to have a very loving and light set of archetypes, but there's that needed counterpoint of the darkness. And as much as it's a dangerous territory, or sometimes things that can affect us harshly, you can't ignore it. If you ignore it, it's going to seep into you anyway.
Right.
So, you know, you sort of acknowledge it and do what you can.
Crowley must have been aware of the older symbolism of Saturn in the way that he represented the universe card in tarot, where you have, it's actually the placement of Tav as a pathway is between Yesod and Malkut. So you can see that he's representing it as the darkness of the, it's like Newt, you know, it's like the veil between us and the spherot above us. Placement is, you know, what keeps the Shekhinah in exile, is that position of Saturn. That's why it's the woman looking it through, you know, through the serpent at the eye, the eye and eye, you know. It's just very, very intelligently laid out, and you can see he was very aware of the older symbolism beyond the Golden Dawn. I have a lot of issues with the oversimplistic way that the Golden Dawn relates to that. And yet at the same time, a lot of that approach to occultism, you can see the way that it's influenced people and possibly why Crowley had his own kind of reaction to the Golden Dawn system. That probably had something to do with it, I imagine. And, Israel Agarde must have been aware of it on some level, coming out with his Garden of Pomegranates book. Because if you actually, read Cordova's Garden of Pomegranates, I mean, that's like half the book is focusing on that. And it's an enormous work, so... Yeah.
Hey, so I'm gonna have to cut you off there. Chris, do you have anything you want to leave us with?
I wish everybody was just a good example for each other and just try to be positive. I think the world would be a better place, but it starts with you. And I guess that's the only advice I got anymore.
No, that's beautiful.
Try to be positive.
It's a beautiful.
I've almost been dead. Yeah.
Well, we're glad to have you, Batman.
Yeah, I'm really. I
guess
don't
know. They didn't want me yet. I gotta take Satan's throne. I have to go to hell and get that throne and take it over. I might have to fight Aleister Crowley when I get there. I'll be his chief of staff. I don't really care.
I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, good talking to you guys.
I'd like
great
to
day. Be well and please keep up. Head up, man.
Yeah, I am.
All right, you need to...
Okay.
Bye.
All right. Later.
If the sun refused to shine, I would still be loving you. When mountains crumble to the sea, there will still be you and me. Kind of woman, I give you my all. Kind of woman, nothing more.
Little drops of rain of the pain, tears of love lost in the days gone by. My love is strong, here there is no wrong. Together we shall go until we die.
My inspiration's what you are to me. Inspiration, look, see. Today my world, it smiles. Your hand in mine, we walk the miles. Thanks to you, it will be done. For you to me are the only one. If the sun refused to shine, I would still be loving you. Mountains crumble to the sea, there will still be you and me.